All right, this call is now being recorded. Everything you say can be taken down and used against you. All right. First of all, I've got a guest speaker today who will be on in about 5 minutes' time, I believe. So just a quick mention that a number of you, I think I had about a dozen or more people came on the Business Builders program. We had our first call 2.5 weeks ago. And yeah, we're just working through the things that we need to do to get our business set up correctly to actually get out there and make it happen. So one of the issues I had was that Tuesday nights didn't suit everybody. I'm doing every second Tuesday night. So what I did think about the possibility of sort of how do I accommodate people, and I've thought, well, this course, it's not going to be an ongoing, never-ending course. And so what I'll do is when I get through what I want to cover with these guys, I'll come back to the start and offer it again, and I'll pick a different time slot for those of you that just can't possibly do the Tuesday night.
No, cool.
However, it's all being recorded, and I did think at first that recordings probably wouldn't be of much use, but so far with the two sessions that we've had, I think there's probably a fair bit of value in just listening to the recording. So if you wanted to contact Kathy, she can give you the link to those and you could probably get involved anyway.
David?
Yes?
I wasn't able to join on Tuesday because of the storm that we were having, but I found the recording really good when I went.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, yeah, you don't want to get electrocuted and or have your computer blow up because you...
No.
So basically, we tried to get people to pair up just so that you've got someone to hold you accountable to and to work with when you need to work with someone in pairs. As I just said, round two, we'll do a different time slot. It's all about accountability and assistance and getting you there. Now, let's have a look and see if Lawrence is on the call yet. Doesn't appear that he is. He said he'd be on at about 10 past. So I'll just fill in some gaps. So you may remember that last year I interviewed a lady whose name is just eluding me at the moment, and it will come to me, who was a specialist in helping people with bankruptcy. And occasionally, you know, you'll come across a client who you'll think, you know, wow, how far do I go? You know, where does my expertise end? You know, it's lovely that we want to help everybody, but you know, there are some people that we just can't help. And you know, I've had conversations with spending planners who've tried to help everybody, and some, you know, with $180,000 or $150,000 in unsecured debt, it can get a little bit hard to work with people in that situation. One especially I can recall whose husband or partner or whatever he was didn't even know. And he was borderline suicidal, so there was no way he was allowed to know. But this woman had her name on about $180,000 worth of debt. So I know this particular spending planner went to great lengths and ended up, I think it may have actually been that lady whose name's still just not coming back to me, who did help out in that case.
Isn't that Cheryl?
Cheryl, thank you so much, Cheryl Stainsby. She didn't go bankrupt, because if she had, her husband would have found out about it all. But they have worked out, they've renegotiated some of the debts, and they are working through that. So I think there has been a satisfactory solution there. But Lawrence contacted me.
I've heard that name before.
Not that long ago. I think he actually found Carolyn's website or something, because he had a chat with her, and then he contacted me and had a chat with me. And I was very impressed. And over the years, I've seen so many advertisements on TV and heard them on the radio for all of these debt help businesses, where basically what their goal is to put people into a Part 9 agreement, which is one step away from bankruptcy. And it basically means that for the next 4 or 5 years, that particular person is on a payment plan. They've negotiated the debt down to maybe 50% of what it was, and now they've got to make their payments. If they miss a payment, they basically go into default, and it goes to bankruptcy. And it's just like having a ball and chain around your neck. And, you know, I just never felt comfortable with the business model where the government was getting a big chunk of the money that those people were paying, and the debt reduction company were getting a big chunk of it, and the actual people who were the creditors were getting, you know, like 10 or 20 cents in the dollar or some really small amount. And it just seemed to me that there was this hungry tribe of people, you know, looking for someone who was in debt that they could just savage. And I even heard of one guy on the Gold Coast who had a business like this, and he said to one client, look, you haven't got enough debt for me to be able to help you, so why not go and spend a bit more?
Shit.
Yes, that was exactly my reaction at the time. So, you know, some very unscrupulous people and motivated by money. And the conversation that I had with Lawrence, and I hope he comes on soon because I'm going to be looking silly if he doesn't. his business model is totally different. Part 9 agreements, from what I can work out now, I'd rather go bankrupt. Because you go bankrupt and you walk away. Yet you've got a blotch against your name for however many years, but you're basically free to go and start your life again. With a Part 9 agreement, you've got this ball and chain around your neck for the next 4 or 5 years with the threat of if you miss a payment, well, you'll be in arrears and, you know, everything will just go pear-shaped. So, apparently, my guest speaker, who I'm already introduced, isn't on the call just yet. He emailed me earlier because he came on at New South Wales 1 o'clock. So
I did the same. Tried to.
Yeah, well, next week that would have worked fine, I think.
Well, my phone told me it was 1 o'clock, and I went, oh, no, it's later.
Yeah, let me just see if I can go into my emails and see where he's up to. Okay, so while we're waiting for him to appear, I will go to the next item on my agenda. So, towards the end of last year, I made a decision that I was going to start a podcast.
I love it.
Right, so I have started a podcast, and if you wanted to go and find it, this is where you'll find it. I've using a website called anchor.fm is the address. If you wanted to start a podcast, it seems like a fairly reasonable platform to use. And then Right on the Money is my particular podcast channel, if you want to call it that. I was approached by Carolyn Mose, who was interested in doing the same thing. And we decided that, well, if we're both thinking of doing a podcast, why don't we do it together? So we've now recorded 4, and I've put the first one up last night. It's recommended that probably we do release 1 a week. So every Monday, Carolyn and I are chatting on different topics and recording it and editing it. There you go. Bless you, whoever that was. And hi, Lawrence, I see you're there now. I'm just waiting for your microphone to appear. There is one podcast there already and more to come. So, all right, Lawrence is on there, so I'll just do a... Hey. Is that you with that cough, Lawrence?
No, I'm healthy as bull right now.
Okay, cool.
It's Barry.
Oh, David. Barry. How are you, Barry? That's no good at all. All right, well, I'm going to mute everybody and then unmute Lawrence, and then we won't have any background noises and it will be better. Cool. All right, Lawrence, I've done the whole big wrap. I've talked about bankruptcy. I've talked about Part 9 agreements, just filling in time. I've basically said I'd rather go into go bankrupt than go into a Part 9 agreement after what I've learned. And I've basically said that I've felt uncomfortable for a long, long time about all of the people who I see advertising or hear advertising their debt help services, where it just seems to me that it's their benefit and not the client's, it's the motivation. So credit mediation services, I believe you are different. So give us a little bit of insight as to what you do that's different.
Yeah, thanks, David. And thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with you and your network. And feel free to ask any questions to the network. Please feel free to ask any questions as we go.
Mate, you're really quiet. I don't know if you can get closer to your microphone, but if you can, that would be great.
Yeah, no trouble. I'll do my best. I'll speak up as well. Just feel free to ask any questions during or after the presentation, and I'll do my best to answer them. And speaking of Part 9s, there's some recent changes in the law with the Part 9s. So it's a lot better than what it used to be, but still there's some challenges. Probably the most marked change will be the term of the Part 9 from 5 years to 3 years, which in my mind makes it somewhat worse, because trying to pay a group of debts off over 3 years as opposed to 5 years just makes it more difficult.
Harder, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so debt negotiations. I'll tell you what it's not. It's not bankruptcy. It's not a Part 9. It's not a Part 10. It's nothing to do with the bankruptcy laws. We're not bankruptcy specialists. What we do is we specialise in using the client's profile, the idiosyncrasies of their profile, to leverage a better deal with their creditors.
Right.
So for example, you take Joe Lunchbox, who's married.
Sorry.
Yeah, the average Joe Lunchbox, he's got 50 grand worth of credit card debt, him and his wife, two kids, mortgage. And so we would examine their background. So we'll look at their spending patterns, relationship with the banks, how their payment history has been, what their purchase, income and expenditure, asset liability, mental health, medical problems, if any, and just as important as all of that is the compliance history of the bank. Has the bank breached any compliance laws, the NCCP?
Right.
So we use that profile, and it's not unlike bankruptcy, where one size fits all. With us, it's more, we use the individual profile to extract an individual outcome with the bank. So, for example, this Joe Lunchbox owes $50,000, might owe $20,000 to Westpac, $10,000 to Commonwealth Bank, and $20,000 to ANZ, commercial and consumer debt. So we would, knowing the policies and procedures and how they're flexed with each bank, by various individuals within the bank, we might offer ANZ 50 cents in the dollar, Commonwealth Bank 35 cents in the dollar, and Westpac 40 cents in the dollar, because of their particular idiosyncrasies, how they would view this client and how they'll flex those policies and procedures. And so we'll, within 3 weeks, secure an outcome of a partial or a whole debt waiver for the customer.
Yep.
All right. So the outcome is really about getting a settlement with the bank within a few weeks of negotiations, a settlement that the client will be happy with and can settle the debt within 14 days. It's got to be an outcome that the bank is also happy with.
Right, so the banks are just going to go, oh, okay, we'll just take a reduced payment, and that's all. How hard are they to convince that they need to do that?
Very hard, because if an accountant, broker, etc., would approach the bank, generally they'll say, no, we don't do settlements. Often it's the case they might say, yeah, okay, we'll do a settlement, or take the initiative in offering settlements. So a lot of financial specialists would have seen a settle for less offer from Citibank, for example. That's generally under circumstances where the account is sitting at maybe 5 months in arrears, 6 months in arrears, and they're ready to factor the debt off to a debt collection agency. Right, so they're going to sell the debt off for...
Anyway, yep.
5 cents in the dollar anyway. So they'll offer 80 cents in the dollar. Just loose change in order to galvanize the debtor into settling the debt, which is fine. It's part of their process, their collection right. process.
And we're talking about people here who've missed payments and are clearly in debt stress anyway, so they kind of know that they're not going to get back their entire...
That's right. Yeah, so that's in that particular context. So, but a customer who uses a debt negotiator, it doesn't matter whether the account is in arrears or up to date. So long as we can demonstrate that there's some there is some level of stress involved in paying their debts. So we've had clients who've been paying on the button every month on their mortgage and credit cards and personal loans and overdrafts. They've been keeping up with the repayments, but they're eating noodles for dinner.
Yep. Well,
you've all seen them before, where you know their ethic is that they've got to keep the bank happy, but they make sacrifices elsewhere. On the other hand, we've seen people who have surplus income, but yet they're not paying their creditors. We can't represent people like that. We can only represent people who are struggling financially in order to secure a settlement.
Yeah. I have to say, this is very hard, this conversation, because you're drifting in and out and really hard to hear. Was there a phone number in the email I sent you that you could call in on a phone rather than the internet just doesn't seem to be working very well?
Quite possibly. Just bear with me for a moment. Let me put my headset in and see if that makes any difference.
Right.
Can you hear me more clearly now?
That might be a bit better. Let's see how that goes. I think so.
All right. So we can, let's see how we go with that. Otherwise, I can phone in. That won't be a problem.
Yep. All right. So we've got a client who's got in stress, and whether they're actually in arrears or not, but they can be shown to be in stress.
Yeah.
And spending planners come across lots of those. So how do you make your money, I guess, is a question that I'll need to ask at some point in time, because... you know, with the Part 9 agreement, I know the government's got their hand in the pie, and so is the debt help company.
Yeah, most certainly. Yeah. So with debt, I'll answer it in two parts. First, what the industry charges and what we would charge. So the industry, the debt negotiations industry is quite boutique. There's only about half a dozen specialised negotiators, probably not even that around the country. There are companies who do Part 9 debt agreements or debt repair and that dabble in negotiations, but the level of skill varies in those organisations. So there's probably only about 4 to 6 specialised debt negotiators around the country who particularly specialise in this field. And they might charge an hourly rate or an upfront and a success fee. So it does vary in that regards, but what we charge is nothing upfront nor through the process. So our fee generally is 22% of what we save, if we save any money. So if the client is unhappy with the outcome, then we forfeit our fee, all of it, and they forfeit savings, which is the fruit of the labour, and everyone goes home. So there's only one fee, and that's on the back end. There's 30%, and it's important for our referring agents to be aware of this, 30% of our clients are pro bono. So if you have a client who's an aged pensioner or a cancer patient, then they'll get the full force of our service without any fee whatsoever. And generally, we'll look at a full debt waiver in that regards.
Sorry, just making sure we heard correctly, because it isn't that good still. So an aged pensioner or someone with cancer?
Yeah, so they'll get it for free, no problems at all.
Okay, so you just go into bat for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how do you say no to a customer like that? You can't.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a community responsibility. That aside, though, our fee is 22% of the savings. Now, we do cap that. So if we're going to save, say, $1 million or $5 million or $10 million, then we're not going to charge 22%. That'll be a small capped fee. But again, only on success.
Yeah. So if you save someone $10,000, your fee would be $2,500.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So if they haven't got the money, they've got no money, how do they pay that fee?
Good question. So there's two two ways I can answer that. The first is when you tell a customer that, look, you owe $300,000, we can reduce that down to $50,000. That's our estimate based off ABC, XYZ information that we've got. So that means, you know, this customer's going to save $250,000. The fee on that might be, wouldn't be 22%, it would be less than that. And so they tend to find the money because they know they're about to pocket $250,000. So that's when, you know, the Uncle Frank comes in, or mum comes in with the inheritance, or they sell the house, or they surrender the super if they can, or et cetera, et cetera. They find the money somewhere.
Right. Now, there's strong enough motivation to get out of their way and find it some way.
Exactly right. Now, if they can't, we don't like to leave them high and dry. So if they can't raise the capital, so what we can do is that we can introduce a secondary product where we can just put them on a 5-year interest-free payment plan on their unsecured creditors.
Right.
So that reduces their monthly payment, because, you know, we've all heard of debt serfdom. So you owe $50,000, and you're going to be, if you pay that over the period of 20 years, you're paying $150,000 back with all the interest. So you're enslaved to your credit cards. So what we do is we reduce that $50,000. We negotiate with the banks to waive the interest on the future interest, and the customer pays virtually an interest-free loan of that $50,000 over 5 years. And then, voila, over the medium term, they're debt-free.
Right. So that sounds a lot better than continuing on with the ball and chain. Yep. So what impact does this have on their credit score, then, their credit report, or whatever you call it these days?
Yeah, on their Vita report, no impact whatsoever. So the credit report stays clean. And if their credit report looks like a Christmas tree before it comes to us, then those defaults that they have will be listed as settled once we've completed the negotiations. But by using a negotiator, you're not attracting any defaults in your credit report.
Right. Okay, so that's a great benefit then. Get rid of the Christmas tree as well. So are there any sorts of debts that you can't negotiate? Like, for example, mortgages, like secured debts? You only work with unsecured debts, or?
Yeah, look, on face value, we can't negotiate secured debts, mortgages, vehicle finance, equipment finance, and so on. Until it gets into a distressed situation. For example, if it's an upside-down mortgage, that would be the mortgage is $500,000 and the value of the property is $400,000, as an example.
Right.
So we see a lot of that in the mining towns in WA and Queensland. Case in point, we had a broker, she invested unwisely into 5 properties in 2 mining towns in Queensland and WA. The purchase price on it was about $6 million. She mortgaged about $3 million, so it's a 50% loan-to-value ratio. So all was going well until the mining boom stopped. The mines in both towns had closed, and suddenly the valuation dropped from $6 million to $1 million.
Wow.
So she was in the hole $2 million.
Yep.
So she had a mortgage at 3, value at 1. She was in trouble. So our instinctive reaction to that would be, okay, hold on if you can. If you can service these mortgages, you're better off riding through this this bubble and hopefully coming out the other end in a few years. In her case, she couldn't because the renters are gone. She couldn't service the mortgages. So what we did is we helped facilitate the sale of the properties, totaling about $1 million. There was a $2 million shortfall. We negotiated that deal about $50,000 for her with the mortgage insurers. She was able to raise that $50,000 by other means, paid it to the mortgage insurers, done, and she didn't owe any more money. Under that kind of circumstance, it's negotiable.
Yeah, and once you've sold the asset, well, then it's an unsecured debt anyway, isn't it? So.
Exactly right. That's the only way. It's only negotiable when it becomes an unsecured debt. So it's the facilitation of the sale of that asset whatever it might be, a tractor, piece of mining equipment, a residential property, and then it becomes the unsecured debt. You're right, David.
Right. Cool. Okay. So, to me, that sounds like a pretty good deal, especially compared with the what I've been disliking for a long time with the other, you know, the Part 9 agreement people.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the fact that you do pro bonos and that you, you obviously care. How long have you been doing this?
A long, long time. So informally, we've been doing it for about 22 years.
All right.
Formally, as a business, we've been doing it for about 18, 17 years.
Right. So you've got That's plenty right. of experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Give me an estimation. How many dollars would you have written off in those 18 years?
$86 million.
Oh, I didn't think you'd be able to give me an accurate figure.
Well, 86 and change, yeah.
Wow.
86. Yeah, the biggest one was around just about $80 million with Deutsche Bank for a client.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he got an absolute bargain from us, an absolute bargain. He paid pocket change for us writing off that $80 million. Because paradoxically, waiving $80 million was just as hard as waiving $80,000.
Right.
Yeah, because the principles remained the same. We yep. still had to do the checks and balances to make sure, firstly, we had the right type of customer because we have to go through a vetting process to ensure that we're ethically doing the right thing. Yep. And then secondly, we had to make sure that we covered all the bases and anticipate all the questions that the creditor is going to ask us and be ready with a counter response. And we did exactly the same thing for this customer. It was a property developer. So we had to approach Deutsche Bank and their representatives, as we would have with the average, you know, Frank Smith who yep. owes money to the bank.
Johnny Lunchbox. Yep.
Yeah. Johnny Lunchbox.
Yep. Cool. All right. So I think, and I know we've had a conversation before now where I believe we can work together. So spending planners come across somebody who's got a problem, lots of debts, and it's like, well, we'd love to help you with your spending plan, but at the moment everything's upside down and you know, this isn't our area of expertise. How do they refer a client on to you, which probably wouldn't be too hard? They can see on their screen right now, there's your website or part of it.
Yeah, so the best way to refer a client is that there's two ways.
Yeah.
The way I wouldn't suggest, although you can do it this way, is give your client our name and number because the client invariably won't call.
Yep.
The reason why they're in a bit of financial trouble is because they're leaving a problem to the next day. And before long, they won't get around to it. Yeah. Yep. So the best way is to seek the client's verbal permission to refer their name and number only to us. We don't need anything else, just their name and telephone number. If the client is a little bit funny about that, or the spending planner is a bit funny about that, which is perfectly fine, the spending planner can contact us directly and say, okay, I've got Joe Lunchbox here. This is the scenario. What do you think you could do? And so we give some initial feedback on what options the customer has.
Right. So how do they contact you guys? Do they ring you? Are you going to give us your phone number, or is sure. there
a yeah. phone number? They call the 1-300 number, and one of the staff or myself will answer the phone, and you can run the scenario over the phone, no problems. Or you can email us. There's no.
All right. So what is the 1-300 number?
1-300-490.
Yep.
030.
All right. And does that 490-030 actually spell something?
No.
I just thought I'd check.
Yeah.
It probably does, but it might be a word that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly right. It's Indonesian for something. Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
I was just going to say, anybody got a question? So go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, Lawrence. It's Hello. Anne here.
Hello, Anne.
I have a question about, you know, you're talking about how, you know, there are certain clients, and I have a lot of these clients who are religiously paying their debts on time and, you know, living on noodles, as you say. How do you convince the banks that that is what's happening? And how do the, I mean, because the banks, I don't get what would be in it for the banks if the client is still paying. I mean, obviously they're going to default sooner or later, but how do you convince them that this client is, you know, under severe financial distress and, you know, should be given leniency or whatever? Like, how do you do that?
Great question. And it is the key question. How is it you do that? So when you, all of you I'm talking to are very experienced in looking at people's budgets. Budgets are not objective though, they're subjective. So the way a bank will look at a budget will be different to the way you might look at a budget or the customer look at a budget. And it goes the same with the bank itself. So if you look at the underwriting department with, say, ANZ Bank, who write the loans, they'll look at a customer's budget that they're looking at an application for finance with differently to, say, the collection or the hardship department, because banks are siloed. So so when we are putting together a customer's budget, we're mindful of the extra costs, you know, private schools, medical costs, the individual costs, whereas banks tend to look at more generalised costs. So if you're mum and dad and two kids, then they know how much electricity you spend and what your utility bills are and your average food bill and so on. But we go in much more detail than that, probably to your level. And so we look at the individual and we look at all of their idiosyncrasies and we spot hot points. Hot point would be, okay, so the bank has breached the law here, here, and here. And so, and also the bank hasn't taken under consideration when we're looking at a hardship case, these expenses. And so we're putting together this individual case. But also, you look at what they're, we're talking about hot points, but we're talking about hot buttons. So what is the hot button for let's say, National Australia Bank? I'll use that as an example. So with NAB, we might be dealing with a customer who has, a few weeks ago, we had a customer with a six-year-old, the child was 6 years old, and she was blind. So what we did with that is we knew that within NAB hardship department, there's a blind employee named Ross. NAB's like that. They often employ staff with disabilities, which is fantastic. So we put the case together and we submitted it to Ross. Because we know Ross is more empathetic towards these cases. Or if your client is a single mum but in her mid-50s and struggling financially, we know that with Latitude, we might go to Gail in the collection department because Gail is a single mum in her mid-50s. And we know that Gail doesn't work on Mondays, but she works Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So we'll submit the deal to Gail with Latitude on Wednesday or Tuesday. And because individuals, you've got bank policy and procedure, but that's black and white. Various different people flex their policy and procedures in different ways with different interpretations. And so we've got to know who's who in the zoo with each bank and debt collection agencies and match make, I guess, is another way of looking at it, the client, the debtor with the creditor. And that's just a small part of how we put a client's case together and then submit it. So I hope in a roundabout way that answers your question. But in the end, it's about convincing the bank that it's within their interests. And probably summarising that is that we've got to draw an accurate picture to the bank. If you hold on to this credit card and this debtor, if you hang on to it, they're going to follow a collection process and you're eventually going to factor this debt off to a debt collection agency. Here's the budget to prove it. Here are the circumstances to prove it. Here's the medical letters, the supporting documentation to prove it. There it is. So even though they've been maintaining these credit, the repayments, they're doing it at the sacrifice to themselves. They're doing it by borrowing further money to service these creditors. So it's a false economy. And so this is the trajectory is going to be hell for them.
They're they're just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. It's going to go down.
Great way to put it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Excellent question. Thanks, Anthony. Any other questions before we, before I go to my next question for Lawrence? Because what I heard you say there a couple of times, Lawrence, was that you're doing budgets for people, and we think budgets suck, but I think you're probably doing more than just an average household kind of budget.
Yeah, well, we get the customer to complete our budget, but we don't submit that to the bank because the information is too raw, because they put all sorts of, you know, silly things on there that they shouldn't. And we're vetting them as well. So case in point, a couple of months ago, we had a client who's, you know, he is on $200,000 a year, which is fine. We still might be able to represent them. He still might be experiencing hardship. But what is he spending his money on? And as it turns out, he was spending $5,000 a month on horses because, he said to me, well, I've got teenage girls. I'd rather them have horses than boys.
Boys, yeah.
And so it was a small price to pay for him. And yeah, sure, okay, I get that. But I can't tell that to the bank, so we can't got a budgeting problem, not a hardship problem. So so we're looking for key pieces. We want to rearrange that budget to make sure that that we're submitting a good, ethical, clean budget to the bank to show that there is hardship.
Yeah, that and there are no bullet holes in it, that it's bulletproof. Yeah.
That's right. It's bulletproof.
So what's the how often would you come across somebody who you say, look, you know what, you really don't qualify. We're not going to get you across the line. You just need to go away and get a little bit more serious about your budgeting and taking care of your money.
Oh, about 50% of the referrals that come to us.
So where do you send them?
Up until recently, we've been referring them to financial counsellors or sending them out to the ether, suggesting to go see a budgeting specialist.
So I've got a network of spending planners around Australia who'd love to work with some of these people, provided they can get paid.
Yeah, we have heaps of clients. Got one this morning, actually. Yeah, yep. We have heaps of potential clients we can send through.
Okay, so you and I need to talk about how we might be able to do something.
Sure.
Because I think there'll be two-way traffic. Because I know, you know, I've had conversations with some of the spending planners who are on the call now who have come across clients who thought, well, you know, this person's beyond help from our perspective.
Yeah.
So very happy to send them on to you now that we know a little bit about the ethics behind what you do and how you do it. And, you know, in at the same time, if you're getting people that you think, you know what, just give up the horses or give up the cigarettes or whatever and you should be fine.
Yeah.
We'd love to help out there as well. So.
Yeah. Look, we, in the end, in it's similar, I would believe it would be similar in your industry. We end up helping about, at most, 1 in 5 that are referred to us.
Okay.
Because of various reasons, you know, we can't help, or they self-vet, they lose interest. But about 50% of the time, it's clients who that we can't assist, happy to move on. And actually more than that, because even those customers we do assist, we only fix the symptom to the problem. We don't fix the cause. The cause of the problem is, dude, you're not really good at with your money. You need assistance. So you might be debt-free, but that doesn't solve the problem. You've got to just work out how to...
Right. So after you've done what you do with those 1 in 5, those people probably need our services as much as the ones that you can't help.
Absolutely. Because what we're about is we're about helping the customer, and we can only help with the skill set that we have, but we can't help them with the budgeting. So I'm more than happy to... Like, if you want to talk about it, say, that you offer, say, one... free session for every referral that we send through for them. So we can say, look, we can send you to your nearest spending planner. they'll offer you one free session and this is the benefit and blah, blah, blah. Happy to do that with every single client that we have. Every single client. Very happy to do that.
Cool. All right. We will discuss how that can happen. So I'm really pleased that I think you reached out to us. I'm glad that you did, because it seems to me that, you know, I really for years have just cringed every time I've thought of, oh, well, do you send someone to, you know, debthelp.com or whoever they might be, and you hear them advertising on the radio, and I just know that their business model is just, I knew there was something on the nose about it, and I just didn't know what the alternative was.
Yeah, look, it's a type of industry where businesses make money, and they've got to make money and they survive, and that's all fine and good. But the industry that we're all in here, where we've got to be able to help within and charge within measure and be reasonable about what we do. So it's not just about being in business, but it's about providing a service to the customer, whether you get paid or not at the end of the day, because there's going to be times where you're not going to get paid for what you do. And because what you do, you're working with a group of people who need help and they don't always have money to help you. And you've got to be prepared to cop it for that. That's the price you pay. We're not selling Mercedes Benz. We're not selling luxury homes. We're selling a service for someone who's in a lot of trouble. And so you've got to be prepared to, you know, give a little skin for that.
All right.
Yeah. Now, if it's okay with you, do we have time? Maybe if just three minutes.
Yeah.
I want to give you about three case samples to
perfect. Yep.
Just to give an idea of the type of clients that we have that could use our service. Yep, so the first one, these are recent case samples. So we had a self-employed individual. He was a photographer, him and his wife, in their mid-60s. A photographer in Canberra. They were doing it tough and they ended up owing about $360,000 in unsecured debt, credit cards. They lived in their own little, you know, their own little world thinking, yeah, the industry will change, we'll make more money later, and then we'll be able to pay the debts back. But it never happened. So with that case, there was a lot of compliancy problems with the banks, credit limit increases, etc. And we're able to reduce the $360,000 down to $38,000 for them.
Love it. Yep.
Yep. All right, so that was done within about 6 weeks of negotiations.
Yep.
They paid it by refinancing their property. Done. No problems. Second one was a couple, PAYG, normal, you know, mum and dad with three kids. And they just went on over the period of 10, 15 years. They used up their credit cards on holidays, white goods, paying Woolies, fuel, electricity, etc. on their credit cards. But it's about 15 years worth of with the debt here, total about $80,000. Got that down to about $15,000 just on the basis of financial hardship. All right, so we're able to waive $65,000 for the customer. Now, both their credit reports stayed clean. So there was no negative ramification other than they can't go back to the bank we negotiated with for credit in the near future, in the short or medium term.
That makes a lot of sense. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So they saved $65,000 within about four and a half weeks. And then we have an age pensioner. This one went to a debt collection agency, Lion Finance. Now, with this one, it was an old NAB debt. And it was an old lady. She was blind. And her grandson came to her and said, oh, grandma, I've got this great business idea. Can you go guarantor for me for $30,000? Don't worry, you'll get your money. I'll pay it back within a few months. No problems, because this is such a good business idea. So we've all heard that story. So she went, oh, okay, love, I'll just sign along here. And off he went. And so he never made one payment and he took off. Business failed, of course. And so NAB sold the debt. It followed the collection process. They didn't contact grandma, the guarantor. They listed the debt as a skip. They couldn't locate him. They weren't very efficient with their process. They sold the debt off to Lion Finance. Lion Finance being a much more efficient and effective collection
agency. They got the application. They identified Grandma. They didn't even bother looking for him because they can see what the story was.
Yep.
They went straight to Grandma, pressured her to make $500 a month payments. Now, she's in her 80s, blind, in the house that her husband built after their honeymoon, and living on her own on the pension. And they forced her to pay $500 a month at pain of losing the property through bankruptcy. So she, after a few months of struggling, she reached out to her planner. Her planner reached out to us, and we spoke to her, and she was struggling. She was missing out on paying. She was missing out on her medication because she had to pay line finance. She wouldn't lose her house. So that was $42,000 that was ended up owing. We reduced that down to $6,000 because of the breaches of the NCCP.
Yep.
And so her son, the father of the delinquent grandson, coughed up the cash, paid it, and was done. There's three examples of what we do. And that was a pro bono too, by the way.
Yeah. Cool.
Happy days.
All right. I'm very impressed. No doubt the guys on the call listening in and those that will listen to the recording later on will also be impressed. So I'm looking forward to us doing business.
David, can I just ask a question?
Yeah, sure. Of course.
Lawrence, do you negotiate with non-bank creditors at all?
Yes, all the time. Trade creditors, tax office, as long as it's unsecured, it's negotiable. What we don't touch is utility bills because they're generally $300 or $400 and the amount of work involved is just not worth it.
Yeah.
Unless it's a pro bono. And we don't touch payday lenders.
Okay, because I've recently spoken to a person who's supposedly got $47,000 in toll fines.
Yeah. We'll look at it. Yeah, okay. We'll look at it. Yeah, so we've negotiated tolls before. We're a little bit shy of it, but we'll definitely look at it.
Okay, thank you.
Cool. No worries.
All right. Cool, well, they've all got your number.
Great, so feel free to give us a call or email if there's any questions. And Dave, let's talk about how we can refer clients and how you wanted to logistically manage that and how we do
that. Yes, yeah. I'll give you a call. When would suit you?
Any time this week. Oh, actually, early next week. Early next week, because I have an idea of... once we completed our service with the client, then sending, because I send them a thank you email and a request for a Google review. And then, I'm thinking about adding it into there. Oh, by the way, here's the name of your closest spinning pan. These are great people who'd be able to help you with blah, blah, blah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. That sounds awesome.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks, ladies and gentlemen, for the opportunity to have a chat with you. Yeah, any questions, just give us a call, okay?
We appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
All right, that was pretty good. I think there's some synergy there that we can work with. What happened there?
I actually spoke to Lawrence several years ago and that didn't go through with.
But right. Yet,
I agree on what you said compared to all the other ones out there. He certainly seemed the best when I was dealing with other stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. To me, I mean, I grew up on a farm and so I can give you an analogy, an image. You know, if you're ploughing a paddock, as you got closer and closer to the centre of the paddock, so there's all of these weeds and grass and stuff that you're ploughing and you're ending up with this beautifully cultivated paddock, and all of the rats and mice that have been in the paddock all end up getting closer and closer to the middle of the paddock, and all of the birds are all following the plough around behind the tractor because they know that they can swoop in and pick up all of these rats and mice and other vermin that have been hiding in amongst the plants. And that's the image I get when I think about these debt collector and debt help companies, where they basically go, let's put you in a part line agreement and for the next 5 years we'll be just feeding off your payments. To me, it just seems wrong. But what he's talking about is a totally different model, and I feel very comfortable with it. So, yeah, hopefully you guys do too. All right, so I was three quarters of the way through telling you about this podcast that we've started. The whole idea here, as you guys know, we've got the Dave Ramsey is an American guy who's very famous, if you like, for helping people or, you know, preaching the get out of debt message. In Australia, we've got the Barefoot Investor, who seems to have a lot of mileage, and yet not everything he does I would necessarily agree with. And he certainly falls short of going the whole distance. The bit that's missing is the bit that we particularly are interested in. So the whole idea of doing these podcasts and everything that I'm trying to achieve now is to raise our profile so people start talking about us. So at the end of every one of these podcasts, it's basically, if anybody's listening in and thinks that this might apply to them, go to findaspendingplanner.com and pick someone to have a chat with. So I'm pointing people at your website and at the same time trying to build the Spending Planners Institute awareness of, you know, of the whole thing of what we're doing. So it's, yeah, hopefully going to help us and get our message out there. The next one on my list, if I can just get that to come up, oh, there's the right on the money, which is obviously a play on words. Now, Anthea and I had a conversation late last year about software drop-off. So I've been doing a little bit of research on what I mean by this is that for every three people that you guys sign up as software users, one of them doesn't continue. Now, I don't like that. I'm sure you don't like that because it means that your $3 a month revenue is sort of only 66% effective. And I don't like it because I miss out on the other bit. And I also don't like it because people obviously aren't getting the benefit of what the software can do for them. The question is why? I don't know, like back to my Simply Budgets days, I've got no idea how many people that bought my software used it. And so I've got no statistics that I can compare with, and maybe one in three is fine, but it's still not a good statistic. And I'd like to find out, you know, just why and what we can do about it. So this week, Kathy and I have set up, we all may have opinions as to why this is happening, but our customers actually know why. We can only guess. So what we've done is we've set up, if I can get this to work, a survey. And every cancellation comes through us. So we've basically, can you guys see that?
Yes, David.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you. We've set up this survey. Every person that cancelled obviously comes through us to cancel at this point in time. When Nick's finished doing the payment system, we'll automate this so that everyone who cancels will basically get sent straight to this and we'll ask them some questions. Now, I want you guys to have a look at this and tell me if you think I can improve it. This is just something we knocked up early this week. It's anonymous and we've basically stated that at the top, so no one should have any fear of saying what they want to say. So about your spending planner, how satisfied were you with the assistance they provided? And it's basically pick one of those. Can I get this to scroll down? Hopefully I can. Regarding the steps that your spending planner took you through, was the process clear, like very clear, somewhat clear, made sense at times, confusing, very confusing?
David, we're not seeing the actual survey. We're just seeing the link to it.
Oh, okay. Let me stop the share and start another one. Thank you, Anthea.
All right.
Share this page. Da-da-da-da.
Yep.
That better? Okay, so how satisfied were they with the spending planner? How's, you know, regarding the steps that we took them through, was the process clear and concise? Was it confusing? I want to know whether it's, you know, whether it's nothing to do with the software, whether it's that they just didn't get the whole reason why they should be using the software, basically, I guess there. I've asked them to name their spending planner, but that's not a compulsory question. You'll notice all the others have got a little red asterisk. Do you find this? Did you find the spending planner software was user friendly? Yes, somewhat. No, too slow. That's a question because we emailed 140 people who've cancelled on Tuesday, basically asking them if they'd do this survey, and not one of them has done it yet. So I've got a feeling that that they're not interested. But if we get them when they're at the point of cancelling, and we say, well, fill in this questionnaire and then we'll cancel you, we might get all of them to respond.
On that question, David, would you put another one to say other comments for someone to come in and...
Well, when I get to the bottom, hold that thought. So did you feel that the software was too... the appearance of... Because this is something that Anthea and I talked about. Maybe the software just looks outdated. My personal opinion on that is that if somebody sees the benefit in what the software does, they really won't care what it looks like, but that's just my opinion. And my opinion is just an opinion. So basically let's ask the experts, did you feel the appearance of the spending planner software was important? And do you think it was contemporary, functional or outdated? So, you know, do you think it really mattered? Yes or no. And, you know, did you think it was outdated or okay or you know, up to date? So I want to find out what people thought about that. How do you feel about the software? You know, had the potential to be a valuable tool, consumed too much of my time. I thought it was accurate in its calculations, just didn't suit me personally. It was brilliant. The only reason I cancelled was because it brought my finances under control and I no longer needed it. So, it was a good value for $10. Maybe they've just cancelled because they thought it was too expensive or I don't know. And the last question, tell us why you decided to cancel the software subscription in words. So basically that way they can tell me what the survey didn't let them tell me. So that's an initiative that we've undertaken to try and see if we can learn from those that aren't continuing what we can do better. Okay. So any comments or questions about that?
Sorry.
Go ahead. Amira?
Yeah. Oh. Who's going? Me?
Yes, you.
Sorry, it's raining really hard here, so I hope you can hear me properly.
Yeah, I can, easy. Yep.
So I wonder if when it comes to the check-ins, whether, because I know that sometimes people get... You know, it's like, oh, I've already got a plan. You know, why would I bother checking in? Whereas I pretty much hammer people on this. Like, I am like a dog with a bone. Mm-hmm. I am just like, no, the purpose is we should be able to get this done in 10 minutes and you should be able to tell. And I actually make them fill out an entire form. You know, like the email that you have. I actually have something else where I make them tell me what their goal is. Did they actually get any closer to it? You know, what's the difference? I make them fill it out on this online form.
Yeah, each week.
Yeah. Yep. And then if you don't get back to me in 2 days, I actually have an alarm. So if I don't get it within the 2 days that you're supposed to have done it, I'll just get right onto them and go, sorry, I didn't get that.
Yeah. And
so I'm just going to just keep hammering them.
And I guess it doesn't take long for them to know you're serious and they have to be serious too.
Well, then I also made a video and I actually sent it to them the other week and I said, do you know what? I actually just was sitting here thinking about what life was like before I had this spending plan. And do you remember what it was like before you had it? And is 10 to 15 minutes a week worth not going back where you came from?
Yep. Go you. So,
you know, it's like, don't mess with me. I'm not my
career. Yeah, that's brilliant, Amira. I love it.
Yep. So you're very proactively not even giving them the opportunity to think, oh, I mightn't bother with this anymore.
Absolutely not. And then I even start with them at the beginning and I said, you know, the point is that you have to keep on top of this. You know, any person who's successful or a business keeps on top of their finances. And pretty much it's like if you don't want to spend 10, 15 minutes once we have it set up working on this every week, then let's not do it.
Let's not even go there. Not even start. Yep.
You know, because I can't deal with the frustration.
Yeah. Anthea, I think you were the other one who was going to say something. has that changed or?
Oh, it's really difficult to get people to fill out surveys. So I like your idea of that they have to fill out the survey before they can achieve cancellation.
Yep. Yeah, well, that's right, because then we've got to find out. Yep.
Yeah, if you can make that happen, that would be good.
Yeah.
And people do like to give feedback too. So at that point where they're wanting to, they should be quite amenable to
that. I would think that right to the last question, there's less than 30 seconds. A minute at the most, and if they, you know, if they want to type a War and Peace kind of response on the last one, that's fine. That's up to them. But I think we can glean some information from this that might help us to get an idea as to what we can do better. But one of the things that I have felt that it may be that some of us are having a worse drop-off rate than others. I've got absolutely no way of telling, because if you found out, for example, that you're losing 50% and somebody else is losing only 10%, well, then we go, hey, let's have a look at what that person that's got 10% is doing, and let's see what you're doing, and let's, you know, let's all learn. So the whole reason that I put the, you know, who's your spending planner there wasn't so that I can find out who the bad guys are, but who I can find out who the good guys are, and we can all learn from it. And Amir has just already said, you know, this is what I'm doing, and I'm thinking, okay, I seriously doubt that you've got much of a drop-off rate, certainly while people are under contract.
Mind you, one person cancel, and that's because it was a friend and I kind of pushed her into it.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Cool.
So that's the only person, and I've had the person that I won the award for more than 1.5 years.
Yep.
And anybody, I say right off from the at the bat, it's like, if you can't afford this software for $2 a week, then we're not doing the right thing, are we?
Correct.
So correct. This is supposed to do you for the rest of your life.
$10 a week is chicken feed, yeah.
Well, a month. But, I say about this questionnaire, can you write up the top of it, you know, that it takes approximately 1 minute to do? Because then people will go, oh, okay, no problem. It's just going to be 1 minute.
Yeah, because in the email that we sent out to the 140-odd people who had cancelled, we said, can you just do this, you know, one-minute survey?
Mm.
So, yes, this should be on the top of the survey. So I will put that on the header.
I know when I see a survey too, I think,
yeah, there goes my day.
And what am I getting out of it?
Exactly.
I like the way you can see all the questions in one go. I hate the ones where you could do one question at a time and then you answer the same thing three times.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's all of those psychoanalytical ones where they ask you the same question three ways to check that you weren't telling a porky pie. Yeah. All right, it's 2:10 here. I had one other thing that was like maybe a 5 minute. And are you guys happy to watch a video?
Yeah.
Well, if that's one person, so I'll do it.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Yep. You might remember that late last year, I was asking people to film themselves telling why they why they like being a spending planner and some of the results their customers were getting. And it was like getting blood out of a stone, but I eventually got a few responses because I had this image in my mind of a promotional video that we could produce, that we could all use, and that the Institute would use, that we could use to basically get people thinking, I need to go and get my finances sorted out. This is what I put together with the videos that were sent to me. I'm very grateful to those people who did what they did. I think when you've seen this, we're all going to go, I hope we're all going to go, there's a great idea in there and we can do better than that. And I've seen the concept. I'm happy to put my hand up and say, yes, I want to be part of this. So can you all see my screen, my Vimeo?
Yep.
Cool. So here we go. Can you hear my sound?
Hi, I'm Sam from Spending Made Easy, spending planner in Adelaide, and I love being a spending planner.
I'm Kim Donnelly from Premier Spending Planners, but I can't imagine a more rewarding, satisfying job than being a spending planner.
Hi there, I'm Mark, and I'm from Spending Planners New Zealand, and we take away people's money stress.
Hi, I'm Stuart, a spending planner from the Hunter Valley.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Mose. I love being a spending planner.
Another of my clients, when I met him, he owed thousands to debt collectors. He had he owed his mum thousands, and now he's back on track. He felt empowered, and this has helped him to drive down his debt, which is awesome.
When I put their spending plan in place, I don't know who is more excited, myself or the clients, when I can show them that they're going to be able to pay that debt down significantly, and I'll even be able to show them the exact date.
I am absolutely passionate about empowering people and educating people in just taking control of their day-to-day spending, getting out of the debt cycle.
We've been able to show them how to save a ton of money, and they're getting excited that they can actually live quite comfortably into the future on their spending plan. That's great.
I also have a client who's very well paid and didn't have much to show for it. He was a typical example of, if I've got it, I spend it.
Now that she's got her spending plan in place, that weight has been lifted and she couldn't be happier.
It's just awesome to see their change in personality, and being a spending planner is one of the best things I've ever done.
It's just my absolute passion to see people set free and move forward toward the lifestyle that many people only dream about.
It's such an amazing feeling to be able to help people in such a positive way like that.
And knowing that you're changing people's lives is just awesome.
Ken and Carrie regain control of their spending and are no longer living paycheck to paycheck. They now have a plan for their future and their stress is gone.
Now that she's got her spending plan, she's in complete control of her finances and she's able to organise a yearly holiday for her and her daughter.
And she still spruiks me all the time and tells all her friends about me, which is just awesome. The fact that she credits it all to her fabulous spending plan is just awesome. And it's just 6 months after that. She knows I'm on the end of the phone. She knows. So, yeah, it's awesome. I love it.
Within a short period of time, only about 4 or 5 months, we've got that credit card debt significantly reducing, and they are ecstatic. They're over the moon because they can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
She said to me, I had no idea where all my money went, and I thought I was doing okay, but clearly I had no idea. Within 12 months, Rowena and her husband bought their first home.
They've been able to save over $25,000 within a 9-month period.
I've got clients from all walks of life. One of my clients earns $250,000 a year and genuinely, by his own admission, doesn't know where it goes. Now he knows where every cent is.
He was spending more than what he was earning. And now he's on track, he's saving money, and home life is just so much better for him.
When a client was recently asked would she recommend spending planning to her friends, her one-word answer was absolutely.
What did you think of that as a concept?
Great.
Good concept.
Yep, I think you'd have to agree with me that there was, you know, different backgrounds and different qualities of the cameras that were used, and some of them were moving, and it would have been better if they were still. I'm not sure if I can get the consistency that I'm looking for, but I'd like to have another go at it. The request that I made was that if they could be in front of a white background, so that every you know, switch between different people, it didn't sort of look obviously different. I didn't get that entirely, but as a concept, I'm going to email you all again and say, look, and I'll probably send the link to the video so you can watch it again anyway if you want to, because I there are people who aren't on the call who may want to get involved. But you'd need to put maybe your phone on a tripod, standing in front of a white wall, get your lighting pretty right, and if I'd be very happy to send you the questions that I wanted you to answer, but I'm sure you got a bit of an idea. We're basically looking for just short grabs of, hi, I'm, you know, Mary Smith. Absolutely love being a spending planner because I get goosebumps from changing people's lives. Yeah, just one sentence responses. I got one client that's paid off $100,000 in credit card debt in 12 months and they're over the moon. Just simple one sentence responses. Doesn't matter if there's breaks in between them because I can easily edit those out. But I just want lots of little grabs where I can go from one person to the other, to the other, to the other, with reasonable consistency of the background and the quality and the lighting. And I think I can put together something that we can all use. You know, the next step would obviously be going to a professional video person and going to a studio. But I reckon we can do something that'll bridge the gap between where we're at now, because that's going to be an expensive thing. But so, yeah, hopefully I've inspired some of you to go, yeah, I can do that.
Hey, David, I just had a thought, because it would be good to get someone to film it professionally, if you organised a videographer to turn up at the next annual conference, that could be actually a really good thing.
Yep.
Then you've got everyone there together and, you know, people can come prepared with what they want to say. And
I actually had it in my mind to do at this last one, but they're just, you know, I imagined that there would be time, but there just wasn't. We just ran out of time. So.
But that videographer could be doing it in the breaks. They wouldn't have to take, yes. It wouldn't have to take time, conference time.
Yeah. You're right. I probably should have thought laterally. All right, so I'll email you all again about that and with a link to that video so you can see. And if you want to be involved, let me know and I'll send you some concise instructions so that we can get some reasonable consistency.
David?
Yes?
Just a quick thing. The same person could video other parts of the conference that you want to keep, like the panel discussions and that, for a separate reason. So
yes.
Do multiple sources with the same.
Yep. Well, the budget for the conference is kind of like shoestring, and we if I get someone along to do that, I just need more spending planners there to make it all work. So it's growing pains to a certain extent, but I will certainly be looking at that as an option for next year.
Someone who's trying to get a start in the industry.
Oh, you know somebody?
No, I'm just thinking maybe someone does.
Yep. All right. Yep. Cool. No, we're onward and upwards. I'm certainly feeling the extra energy from, you know, the start of this year. You guys are going great. There's sign-ups. There's, you know, just everything that we're doing, I'm just looking at it and thinking, how can we do it better? Everything I'm doing, I'm going, how can I help get the word out there, more people to know about what we're doing, which is why I've got the podcast started now. I'm back on writing my book, which I wrote 9 years ago, but it's now out of date. So I've got someone to help me on that because I want to publish that book before the end of the year, if possible, certainly the beginning of next year, if not before. We've just got to get the word out there because we do an amazing job and nobody else does what we do. So while we're in that unique position and before somebody else comes along and says, oh, I think I could do this and I could do it better, we've got to claim this space and make sure we own it. So, yeah. All righty. Hopefully that was worthwhile for you today. I'm certainly looking forward to talking to Lawrence early next week and working out how we can fairly distribute the clients that potentially can come from them out to you guys. So I liked his idea of just going, pick the one that's closest to you or if he refers to the one that's closest by postcode or something like that. But we'll have to work out a fair distribution way of doing that. All right. Any comments or questions before we finish up?
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Cool.
Thanks.
All righty. Talk to you again next time, guys.